I love physics so much. It's my favorite class. I wish I could learn more.
OMG, Claire, I know the perfect solution.
Really, Mike? Tell me more.
Two words, physics in action.
It sounds thrilling already.
Hi, this is Jennifer Ouellette, author of The Physics of the Buffyverse, and you're listening to Physics in Action. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Physics in Action podcast. I'm Adrian.
And I'm Andy. And today, we have a special treat for you. An interview with Jennifer Ouellette, author of The Physics of the Buffyverse and Black Bodies and Quantum Cats, Tales from the Annals of Physics. Let's dive right in with Dana's interview.
Hi, this is Dana from the Physics in Action podcast, and today we're talking to Jennifer Ouellette, author of Black Bodies and Quantum Cats, Tales from the Annals of Physics, and Physics of the Buffyverse. Hi, Ms. Ouellette. Thanks for joining us today.
Pleased to be here.
So tell me, what inspired you to look for the physics in Buffy?
Well, I'm a science writer, and I specialize in physics topics, but I have an English major background, so I know how intimidating these topics can be for those of us who are just getting into it for the first time. I was looking for kind of a fresh way to approach older topics. There's been a lot of physics books out there on history of physics, and I started looking to popular culture, to books, to literature, to film. And when I started looking at Buffy, because I was a big Buffy the Vampire Slayer fan, initially I thought, well, you know, it's fantasy, it has vampires, monsters, there couldn't possibly be any science in that. But of course, science is in everything. Right. And when I really started looking for it, I found that it was everywhere. Not necessarily how it works in our world, but anytime you're creating a fictional universe, there have to be rules. And physics is all about finding the rules of how the world works. So, for instance, there's a whole chapter on the thermodynamics of magic, and it talks about energy conservation and things like that. Magic might not be real, but the rules that govern it bear striking similarities to some of our own rules of physics.
Yes. Okay, so how did you get into writing about physics? I mean, I was reading that you were an English major. What made you change your mind to physics?
Getting to know physicists as people, believe it or not, I took a job when I was living in New York City with an organization called the American Physical Society. It's a professional organization for physicists, and they just needed someone to write news for the organization and go to their meetings and interview scientists. And I started actually meeting them, going to their labs, talking to them. So rather than having physics be this sort of dry thing that you learn in the classroom that has no relevance to the world, I just kind of went both feet into how physics is actually done in the lab and realized it's about what you don't know. It's about discovery. It's about curiosity. It's about having an idea and testing it and building something. And that became very, very interesting to me.
Yeah. Did you always like physics in high school, or did you just get into it and start realizing, like, hey, this is really interesting?
I always liked science in high school. I never actually got around to taking physics because I left a year early. I got early admission to college, essentially.
Oh, wow.
So I never took physics ever. That might have been a good thing in terms of winning me over, because so much, so much. I mean, it sounds like you have a great physics teacher.
I do.
But that's not always the case. And I think sometimes it's all balls and inclined planes, and you don't really get to the good stuff. Sometimes giving people a taste of what's to come, even if it's a little beyond what they're capable of, made me want to learn more about some of the basics that I could better understand, the stuff I thought was really cool. So it gave me a motivation that I might not have had if I just learned it in school like everyone else.
That's really good. That's a really good message for a lot of kids who are probably taking physics now and think it's really boring, and then to give them the idea that they might like it later on.
Yeah, it's not boring at all. A lot of times what comes out in the classroom, because there's certain things you have to learn, you know, before you can really appreciate, you've got to kind of do the boring groundwork first, and then all of a sudden it gets really, really fun. Getting them through that boring phase where they have the skills and the knowledge necessary to really appreciate when it gets cool, that's the hard part.
Yeah. Okay, so Buffy came out in 1992, and now it's like 18 years later, and vampires are the hottest trend that's going on. I mean, what's your reaction to the whole current vampire mania of Twilight and True Blood and everything?
Buffy would totally kick Edward's emo butt.
You know? I don't know if I agree with you on that one.
Actually, I have read the Twilight books. I have a niece who absolutely adores them.
And do I?
Yeah, and I think the third in the trilogy was a little weak, but I actually thought it was a very compelling story.
Yeah.
And there's just something about vampires, I think, that appeals to people. They work metaphorically. They just work as, you know, this mysterious creature. They tap into something unconscious, I think, in us that we all just kind of relate to. Although zombies are giving them a run for their money, but zombies are kind of icky, and vampires attractive. I mean, you don't really have a romance centered around a zombie anytime soon.
That's true. So who do you think would win, a zombie or a vampire?
That's a question that has been asked, in fact, by mathematicians. They've actually done kind of population modeling of vampires and zombies. And it just came out a few weeks ago, and it turns out that actually the zombies would win.
Really?
They're not smart, they're not attractive or anything, but the only way vampires could beat back the zombies is by essentially teaming up with the humans. And only by combining our resources could we beat back the zombies, because the zombies would wipe out the human beings in about 4 days.
Wow, that's good to know.
Yeah, be glad they don't exist.
Yes, I'm very happy for that. Okay, so as a Buffy and an Angel fan, have you ever considered any other projects with Joss Whedon's other projects, like Firefly or Dollhouse?
I was really intrigued by Dollhouse. I was sorry it got canceled. I understand why it had trouble finding an audience, because it was dealing with some pretty heavy stuff. But I thought, in terms of the brain and identity and the nature of memory and consciousness, it raised some very, very interesting questions, as well as some troubling ethical questions as well. So I am planning on at least doing a blog post about Dollhouse. They do have this, pop series of essays, of kind of more academic articles on popular culture, and I might do something on Dollhouse for that. I don't know. But I think of the two things, the Whedon-esque things that you mentioned, Dollhouse is more interesting to me, just because I'm intrigued by some of the questions it raised.
Right. So I hear you have a new book coming out soon, The Calculus Diaries. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, this is actually an outgrowth of learning about physics belatedly. I've always been a little bit math phobic. Not because I was bad at it. I actually did very well in my math classes, but I didn't necessarily know why I was doing it. I was kind of blindly following rules. And really, when you get to the level of calculus, it doesn't make sense if you're just blindly following the rules. You really have to understand what you're doing and why before you really understand why calculus was necessary. So what happened was, I was writing the first book, and I was asking a physicist friend of mine named Alan, you know, I said, look, I know, because I've seen the experiments doing this, and I know that all bodies fall at the same rate regardless of mass, as long as you exclude air, you know, friction, and you don't have, as long as it happens in a vacuum. I said, but I don't know why. And he basically just said, you know, you don't have to take that on faith. I says, I can walk you through the equation, and it'll become immediately clear to you why this has to be true. And I kind of resisted at first because, you know, ew, equations. But he had that classic line. He goes, well, it's not real math. It's just algebra. And so he walked me through it. You can see the little m cancels out, and all that's left is the mass of the Earth, you know, and it made perfect sense. Oh, I see. And it also showed me that math is relevant to the real world, that there's a connection here, and that learning the math that goes along with the physics concepts can actually help you see those concepts in a new and deeper way. So then I wrote a book about what it was like being an English major trying to do this, and my husband's a physicist, so I took him to Disneyland. And we rode the roller coaster and went on the teacup ride and talked about vectors and did all these like calculus problems based on that. And zombie outbreaks and epidemiology, the population exponential growth curve was another chapter. Gambling in Vegas, surfing in Hawaii, sines and cosines and wave dynamics. These are all things that I found a new fun way to kind of get across, especially for people that I used to be like, you know, the people who are afraid of math, the people who kind of resist and they just have these horrible experiences in high school and they don't understand why it's important.
Right. So does it totally taint it for you now? Like when you go to the movies or watch TV, are you just constantly thinking about the physics of it now, or can you actually sit down and enjoy a TV show?
I'm actually very good at the willing suspension of disbelief, far better than the average scientist. I mean, this is the advantage of being a writer and coming from a humanities background. It's like, you know what? They're having fun with a concept, and I'm willing to let them do that. If it's stupid, everyone has a problem with it, regardless.
Right, of course.
But like I love the TV show Eureka. which, you know, has some very out there science, but it's fun. It's fun to watch, and I like watching them play with concepts, and they do make an attempt to at least ground it in reality before they head off into crazy land. So,
right, so as long as they make an attempt, it's okay in your book?
Well, yeah, I think that the important thing is that Hollywood can do, and a good portion of what I do has to do with igniting the imagination of people and making them want to learn more. I don't think you can expect film and television shows, fictional ones, to be documentaries. They're not educational. They're entertainment. What they can do is inspire people to want to learn more. So if you can use them in tandem, in conjunction with entertainment, it's with education, then it's fantastic. You get the best of both worlds.
Right. That's really the goal, is to try to inspire people to learn more about it, I'd imagine.
Yes, exactly.
So when does your new book come out?
It's coming out probably October, November timeframe of this year. So we're going over cover concepts right now. Wow. The subtitle is How Math Can Help You Lose Weight, Win in Vegas, and Survive the Zombie Apocalypse. So, you know.
What made you think of calculus and zombies? Like, how did that come about?
That, there's an actual paper published last summer by an epidemiologist at the University of Ottawa. His name's Robert Smith. And as a way, again, of engaging his students, he had them work out a zombie problem. He just said, assuming X number of zombies and they come to your town, how long before they wipe out the human race? They adapted models for disease outbreaks, particularly slow-moving diseases that have a long latency period. In other words, people don't die too quickly. They have time, once they're infected, to infect other people. And zombies are the classic example of a slow-moving infectious disease. So they spread so quickly, and because it's very hard to kill a zombie and they tend to come back to life, and dead people can become zombies, and there are all these rules from zombie films. 4 days is the worst case scenario. They'll wipe out the entire human race in 4 days. Wow. The good news is at that point, the zombie population will start to die off because they've lost their food source.
Well, at least we have some hope then.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much for your time. It's been such a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, no problem. I'm happy to do it.
From the creators of Buffy Between the Lines Studios presents a new masterpiece in audio drama. This fall, in L.A., hell will break loose. The City of Angels cries out for help. Who will answer this call?
Angel Investigations. We help the helpless. What can we do for you?
An original fan production based in Joss Whedon's universe. A vampire with a soul and his fellow champions will face threats as never witnessed before. Get ready for this action-packed podcast that will blow your mind. Angel Between the Lines. Visit us at angelbetweenthelines.com.
Thanks, Dana, and thank you for listening. We'd love to hear your feedback. You can write us at physicsinactionpodcast@gmail.com or leave us a comment on our website at www.physicsinaction.com. Special thanks to Jeff Myers and 4Me2C for our intro music tech.
Music is provided courtesy of Mevio's Music Alley. Check it out at music.mevio.com.